We get the hour underway by welcoming to the show a sports journalist, editor at Deadspin, a former attorney. Her writing has appeared in outlets like the New York Times, the Washington Post, the Establishment, and HuffPost. She hosted a sports radio show in the city of Chicago, and she's got a brand new and powerful book out entitled Sidelined: Sports, Culture, and Being a Woman in America. We are pleased to welcome Julie DeCaro back to Downtown.
Hey, thanks for having me. It's great to be here.
You bet. I love the book, although it made me incredibly depressed, but I thought that would be the case going in. And I guess the overriding question from all of this is, you know, why do so many men have a problem with women being involved in the world of sports?
Rich, if I had the answer to that, I could probably make millions of dollars. For some reason, I think that there is a segment of men who look at sports as their last bastion of maleness, you know, of alphaness, completely ignoring the fact that, you know, women have obviously been playing sports for centuries. And especially since Title IX, we've grown up, many of us who have grown up since that it was enacted in 1972, sports absolutely as big a part of our lives as men's lives. So, I don't know. And I do think it's this feeling where a privilege eventually, you've been privileged for so long that equality starts to feel like oppression. And these men really seem to feel that, like, women coming into the industry are taking away from the men that are already there. But like I said, you know, I wish I could figure it out. I wish I had a better answer, the best I can come up with.
You talked to so many of the pioneers in the industry who faced their own challenges back 40 years ago and beyond. Folks like friends of our show, the great Leslie Visser, Beth Mowins, and others. Did it feel a little better to know and to realize that the struggle's been going for a while and maybe we're making some progress?
Yeah, it did. And I think, you know, with that group of women especially, because they really were the ones who smashed through the wall first, and, you know, wound up the bloodiest, that it was, I always wondered if they would say to my generation, like, oh, stop whining. You have no idea what we went through. I was the first woman, you know? And that's sort of what I expected them to say. But instead, what I found is that that whole group is like, I don't know how you girls are doing this today. Like, you know, we didn't have social media. We didn't have people telling us how much they hate us all the time or threatening to kill us all the time because we had an opinion about sports. So, it's really sort of gratifying to hear them not only talk about what they went through, but also to acknowledge what we're going through. Because, you know, Christine Brennan said to me once that, you know, we had letters to the editor. We could throw those away if we wanted to. You know, I didn't have to read them. But it's such a part of media these days to have to be on social media where all the news is breaking. And you can't really escape it if you want to do your job well.
We're talking with Julie DeCaro here on Downtown, and obviously there are issues with some of the male sports fans, but as you point out, there are also issues with the owners of many sports media outlets in this country who tend to be largely older white men.
Yeah, there's something called the mirror complex where, you know, the idea is that you hire what you know. And if you're, a white man, then like largely what you know is other white men. And going outside that feels like a risk to people. And nobody in sports media wants to take risks right now. I mean, everything is shrinking. Venture capitalists are buying things up and cutting jobs left and right. Nobody wants to be the person who takes a risk and then has it not pay off. And I think that that's the way that a lot of people who are doing the hiring look at hiring women, women of color, especially Black women. So, you know, it's easier just to keep hiring the white men. But when I see someone put out, like I saw a radio lineup come out from a new station a while ago, and every single person on their station was a man. And I was just sort of, really, in 2021, you're still, this is it? And there were a couple kids of broadcasters. So if you want to talk about, you know, how did you get this job? You don't really deserve it. The thing that they say to women all the time, we don't seem to have that same feeling when, like, Chris Collinsworth's kid gets a big, you know, big boost and gets hired. So it's one of those situations that until we get women in positions where they're the ones doing the hiring, I don't know how much is going to change.
And a lot of men, whether it's hiring people or just consumers, only seem to be comfortable with women in certain broadcast roles.
Yeah. Often, you know, we see the sideline reporters, which is infamously what people think of, and we see women as moderators on shows, right? So you can solicit opinions from the men. You can ask the questions. You can report things that other men told you as a sideline reporter. But when it comes to women really sharing their opinions, analyzing things, saying, well, this is what I see when I look at this offense. Those are the things that we've really been restricted from, that, you know, it's like no one trusts our opinion. No one trusts us to look at a game and analyze it, even though you have a bunch of men who are infamously in these roles who also didn't play football or baseball or basketball that have these broadcasting jobs. So, I mean, we're limited largely to regurgitating what men tell us.
And when women step out of those roles, whether it's in play-by-play or other positions where we don't see or hear women as much, you wrote about the complaints that came in. And the more you analyzed them, it essentially it came down to one thing, and it was one thing only, that they were women's voices.
Yeah, I mean, we're so used to hearing these classic, sort of like the Harry Shearer Simpsons, you know, imitation of a broadcast, a sports broadcaster, where it's a little bit Al Michaels, a little bit Vin Scully, a little bit Jack Brickhouse, but it has this very similar sound. And women don't sound like that. And I don't even know what the female version of like Jack Brickhouse sounds like. And we've never had it, so we don't know. But I would hear guys complaining about my voice, about Jessica Mendoza's voice, about Beth Moen's voice, about, you know, Leslie Visser's voice, about Andrea Kramer's voice. And we all have very different sounding voices. The only thing that we really share is that we all sound like women. And I've had guys say to me point blank, I listen to sports talk radio to get away from women. Why do I have to hear a woman's voice when I turn the station on? And so, I mean, I feel, you know, when someone shows you who they are, believe them. And I've had many men over the years say that, you know, they hate my voice being on a sports talk radio station because they don't want to hear a woman.
Well, and that's rough enough to deal with, but you also write about an even darker side in a couple of chapters, one of them being the chapter Believe Women, and so many stories out there about the upfront physical harassment, dealing with things in the locker room. And some of this has come to light just recently with the Mickey Callaway situation that apparently went on for years. And a guy like Terry Francona, when he was manager of the Indians, heard all about it and apparently did absolutely nothing. It's more that boys will be boys attitude, I guess.
Yeah. And, you know, when the Me Too movement started in 2017, we all in sports media were like waiting because we were watching it go through industry by industry, and we were sort of waiting for it to come to sports media. And it did a little bit. I mean, there were a couple, you know, there was an incident that was reported on at NFL Network. There were some incidents that ESPN reported on, but we never got that industry-wide reckoning that we all hoped for. And, you know, every woman has stories. I think that works in this industry has stories about guys like Mickey Callaway. And the reason that we don't hear about them more is that there's so few of us, we don't feel protected. I think that when you have a Me Too movement and, you know, you would see what would happen at other outlets, you would see 10, 12 women all going to HR together. And, you know, my last job, I was the only woman there. I didn't have an ally to even go with me to HR. So it's going to continue to happen. And largely the attitude in every sport has sort of been, this is women's problem to deal with.
I really appreciate your bravery. And you talk about how you went back and forth on whether to do it in the book. But talking about what I think is an absolute cancer in the industry, and that's Barstool Sports and their whole mindset and the people who follow them down that path.
Yeah, I think, you know, I know multiple women who have wound up in therapy because of Barstool Sports and the way that they have harassed women and, you know, sort of built their brand on harassing women, talking about women in really misogynistic, sexist terms. Unfortunately, there's so many people that know Barstool only as the guys who post funny videos on Twitter or on, you know, Instagram. So I hear people say to me all the time, what's the problem with Barstool? And it's frustrating because, you know, you've heard so many women for so many years talking about the way Barstool has treated them. And, you know, I've written about it before. I've survived the backlash a couple times, which is horrific when it comes, and it's going to come again because of this book. But it felt like someone needed to really sit down and sort of lay out methodically, like, okay, here's the problem with Barstool. I'm starting back from when the site started up until now. And, you know, and even since this book went to publication, there's been a whole bunch more incidents. But at this point, it just feels like they're so big and they have those coveted males, you know, younger demographic of males, guys in their 20s and 30s, that, you know, everybody seems to just be willing to look away from what they're doing. A women's group that I'm part of is having Erica Nardini come speak to them. She's the head of Barstool. She's given them cover to harass women for years and years and years. I don't know. It felt like there was a chance to maybe people sort of stand up and say, this is not okay. And like that chance has passed us by.
Yeah. And it's especially discouraging. And he wrote about it when you see sports organizations like the Boston Bruins and others partner with them.
Yeah. NASCAR has a deal with them. There's been a huge controversy about them supporting or somehow partnering with women's hockey leagues because they've harassed the women who are covering these hockey leagues, who have been there from the beginning, supporting them, often for free, often as bloggers, often just because they're huge fans. And I think it was really hurtful for a lot of these women to see women that they've been covering in these hockey leagues go throw their support behind Barstool. I just saw that they just had Katie Sowers on a Barstool podcast. So many women were inspired by her being on the sidelines for the Super Bowl as a coach a couple of years ago. So I really don't know what the answer is, but yeah, it just seems like we see more and more big corporations, teams, companies who want to, who want to partner with them. And it's really depressing for the rest of us.
You write very powerfully about the incredible abuse that Serena Williams has had to deal with. And I feel like I follow things pretty closely, but I had no idea how bad it was.
Yeah, I mean, to her credit, I don't think she spends a lot of time talking about it. I think that, if looking back on things that were said about her and Venus when they were young girls, I mean, early teens, 13, 14 years old, the horrific racial abuse that happened at Indian Wells, and Serena famously didn't go back and play there for quite some time, for many years. And it feels like she, this is just something that she's had to learn to live with, which is, even in 2019 or 2018 U.S. Open, when we saw that horrific cartoon that was published in Australia, where they had her like with a bone in her nose and, jumping up and down as this like hulking figure. It was just, it was really horrible. And she just continues to rise above it. But definitely what she has been through is something that no woman in sports should have to deal with.
One of the things that people can do to help out is also, as you point out, support women's sports and not just every 4 years. It's a big day around here. Our University of Maine women's basketball team playing for the conference championship today for the right to go on to the NCAA tournament. And I think we're fortunate in many ways here because we've had a pretty good history of women's collegiate athletic success with the only game in town, the only Division I program in the state. But boy, there are a lot of places where people will tell you, oh, you can't talk about women's sports on the radio because no one cares.
Oh, right. No one cares about women's sports. The two biggest U.S. women's soccer, the two biggest American soccer games that have ever been broadcast were both women's games in terms of viewership. The people clearly care about the WNBA. You can see it on social media. You can see it when they have fans in the stands, especially after last summer and how much they took a lead on Black Lives Matter movement and getting Kelly Loeffler out in Georgia and getting Raphael Warnock elected. I think the thing that really has the power to move the needle for everybody across the board, whether you're an athlete or a broadcaster or reporter, is seeing women legitimized in sports space. And so the more that we see the WNBA, the more we see the NWSL women's soccer teams, the more we see women's pro hockey teams, the more we see, other events or other women's teams, the more legitimate it becomes that women are even in the space at all. And I think that helps all of us across the board.
By the way, I have to give a shout out to him because when I noticed his name in the acknowledgments, it jumped right out. Friend of our show, the wonderful Josh Gondelman, played a role in making this book happen.
Josh has been a great ally to me. And I think the reason this book got written was because I was crying to him in direct messages on Twitter one time about, my agent ghosting me. And he said, well, do you want me to introduce you to my agent? And that is the whole reason that this book even got written. So, yeah, huge shout out to Josh.
So as you talk to all of these women, both your contemporaries and those who came before you, is there a sense of solidarity? But obviously that's there. But is there also a sense of hope for the future and progress? And how do we move on from, it feels like we're kind of stuck here, that it looked like we were going someplace and, maybe it has to do with what we had in terms of leadership for the previous 4 years, but is the road ahead better?
I think it is. I think that when I meet younger women, really young women who are in college or just out in the workforce for the first time, they are much brasher. They speak their minds much more than my generation did. They're much, much more willing to ask for what they want, which are all things that I think are so important for women when you're working in a male-dominated industry. You know, it, looking back, when I talk with these women who were the first women through the doors, the first women literally into the locker rooms, it feels like in the 40 years since then, we should be much further down the road. But like I said, with the rise of the WNBA and the NWSL, it feels like things are changing, albeit slowly. And every time we get, I saw that Beth Mowins is going to call a Cubs game this summer. I've been waiting my entire life to hear a woman's voice calling the Chicago Cubs. So it feels like we're making progress. And while we'd all like it to be much quicker, progress isn't linear. And I think it comes in fits and starts. And hopefully we're in a start right now and just, you know, hold those doors open for the women coming behind us and hope that they all flood on through.
Julie DeCaro's new book is called Sidelined: Sports Culture and Being a Woman in America. It's a powerful and I think an important read as well. Julie, thanks so much. Always great to talk with you. We wish you much success with the book and much success at getting us closer to that place all of us would like to be.
Yeah, thanks so much, Rich. I always love coming on your show. It was great to talk to you.